Okay, so I'm going to talk about manipulating graphene at the atomic scale. Okay. I need that. Excellent. So I'll be talking about this, and I'm Mike Cromie, and here's my outline. These are the two topics that I'll be talking about. atomic scale gating, where I'll tell you about some new work where we're exploring tunable charge centers on graphene. And the second topic is nanoribbons, where I'll tell you about some work we've been doing exploring edge states and where we've made some progress at controlling edge functionalization. In the program it said something about strain, but I don't have time to talk about strain. So let's just dive into the first topic, which is atomic scale gating. And here I've chose that sort of provocative title. I hope it provokes you, because I just want to emphasize a connection that I believe exists between the more common problem of exploring the behavior of macroscopic charged electrodes on graphene and perhaps the less common problem of exploring microscopic charge impurities. If you have a macroscopic electrode and you put a voltage on it above graphene or below, then you create an electrostatic potential in graphene, and the electrons in graphene go through that potential according to the rules of Klein tunneling, or they bounce off it, they rearrange themselves around that potential, and I think that's a problem that a lot of people are familiar with. But if I take that electrode and shrink it down as far as I can go to the size of a single atom, then what I'm left with is a single charged impurity, a Coulomb impurity. And this Coulomb impurity also has an electrostatic potential associated with it, and the electrons in graphene also go through it and bounce off it and scatter from it and rearrange themselves around it. And these two problems, I think, have more in common than most people appreciate. And so I'm going to really focus on this problem today. And so in order to understand the behavior of a charged impurity on graphene, I think it's useful to first consider a charged impurity not on graphene that's hanging out in space, a positively charged impurity. Let's take an electron, a non-relativistic electron, and put it in the vicinity of that impurity, and that's hydrogen. And so we all have learned how to write down the Hamiltonian for hydrogen at some point in our lives. And the energy the Hamiltonian has a radial kinetic energy, an angular kinetic energy, and then the attractive part of the Coulomb potential. And then what we all learned how to do is you take these last two pieces and they create an effective potential. And if you draw that effective potential here in blue, then you see that that effective potential is a function of radial distance from the impurity, has a little pocket right there. And that little pocket is important because the electrons like to hang out there and form bound states, and that gives us atomic physics and our atomic orbitals. This also gives us a lot of semiconductor impurity physics as well, because if I put in a charge impurity into a semiconductor, then I get the same kind of effective potential and I get the same kind of bound state behavior in impurities in semiconductors. And I want to emphasize that this kind of physics I just described is invariant to the charge on the impurity in the sense that if I increase Z, then this effective potential, it might get bigger or smaller, but the shape stays the same and the basic physics stays the same. That little pocket still remains right where you see it. Now let's take that impurity and let's put it into graphene. And in graphene, the situation is actually very different, because if I take that positive impurity and put it into graphene, then the electrons behave like relativistic direct fermions. So I have to write down, so the behavior of those electrons is determined by the Dirac equation rather than the Schrodinger equation. And it's a simpler equation, but surprisingly harder. And it's actually hard to extract an effective potential from the Dirac equation, but it is possible if you perform a semi-classical turning point analysis of this equation, then you can extract a kind of effective potential from this equation. And when you write that potential down, as I do here in blue, you see that this effective potential looks very different from the effective potential that you get for the non-relativistic case. In fact, this affective potential has two different regimes which are separated by a critical charge. So there, a critical charge exists, and if the charge on your impurity is below this critical charge, we call that the subcritical regime, and if your charge is above that critical charge, you're in the supercritical regime. And here in the subcritical regime, the affective potential looks purely repulsive. There is no pocket. Like here, there's no bound state. The electron just bounce right off of it. You get scattering, you can get Friedel oscillations, but no bound state formation. On the other hand, if I increase the charge without changing the sign of the charge, just by increasing it, then this effective potential flips sign, and now we get an attractive region, and we can get bound states formation. These are actually quasi-bound states because they're in resonance with the continuum, but I just want to emphasize to you the very different behavior that we get for impurities in graphene compared to impurities in traditional materials. So that's my PowerPoint physics for you, but people have actually done real calculations, and theorists such as Antonio Castroneto and co-workers and Leonid Levitov and co-workers and others have calculated what happens for impurities in graphene. And here I show the results of a calculation by Levitov. Here he and his coworkers calculated the local density of states around a positive impurity in graphene for both the subcritical regime and the supercritical regime. Here in the subcritical regime, this is a plot of local density of states versus energy. And here here in the negative energy branch, what you're doing is you're injecting holes into the graphene, and those holes are positively charged, and so you get a lot of repulsion between those holes and the impurity, and so you get a depletion in the local density of states because of that repulsion. Whereas here in this positive energy branch, we're injecting electrons into the graphene. They're negatively charged, and so they have there's more of an attractive component, and so they can get closer to the impurity, and so for this branch, we get an enhancement in the local density of states. So so that's the main effect, is this electron hole asymmetry in the local density of states. But notice that there are no bound states here. Now, if you increase the charge into the supercritical regime, then you see that you can get bound state formation due to the fact that that effective potential flips sign, as I described in the last slide, and you can get a bound state near the Dirac point. It's actually a resonance, a quasi-bound state. They can have narrow energy width and large spatial extent. Okay, so those are the predictions that people haven't yet seen experimentally. So how would you see those experimentally? Well, one way to approach it is to drop charge impurities down onto graphene and look at the graphene with an STM to see if you could actually see the behavior of the Dirac fermions as they rearrange themselves in the vicinity of these charged impurities. So that's something that we have tried to do in my lab, and so one of the first things that we did was to drop cobalt atoms down onto a graphene device that we put on silicon oxide with a back gate, as you see here. And here are two cobalt atoms, and this is an STM image of two cobalt atoms sitting on that device, and we performed spectroscopy on those cobalt atoms. And when the STM tip is sitting right on top of the cobalt atoms, when we perform spectroscopy, we see a bunch of resonances, which are due to the hybridization of the cobalt with the graphene. It forms these defect states. These defect states are localized to the region of the graphene. They don't extend out they're localized to the region of the cobalt. They don't extend out into the graphene. And one of the nice things is, and here you can see them. This is DIDV versus sample voltage. And these are taken at different gates, and it becomes more p-doped as you go up. And you can see that we can move these resonances from one side of the Fermi energy, that dashed line is the Fermi energy, from one side to the other using the back gate. And that's nice because that means we can charge up or discharge these atoms, these single atom defects. We can put charge into them or take charge out of them by simply pushing those resonances from one side of the Fermi energy to the other. So that's really good because now we can make our, because that gives us tunable charge impurities, so we can then hopefully measure the resulting screening charge of the Dirac fermions in graphene. But when we tried to do that, we failed, and the reason we failed was for two reasons. First is because of charge bistability of the cobalt monomers, and the second reason is because of inhomogeneity of the graphene. The first problem arises because although we can control the charge of our cobalt atoms with the back gate, our little STM tip is also a gate, and when we move that tip away from the cobalt atom and put a voltage on it, it causes ionization of the cobalt atom. And that leads to these rings This is our data. You see an ionization ring around the cobalt atom. This has been seen by others in more traditional semiconductor systems, such as gallium arsenide and other semiconductor systems, C60 as well. And so this is kind of an interesting phenomenon, but for us, it kind of messes the whole thing up, because how can we see the nice screening when we have these rings getting in the way? Also, we have a huge inhomogeneity in the graphene topography and charge, which messes it up too, because it's hard to see the screening when there's all these charge puddles screwing everything up. So I'm happy to report now that we've overcome these two problems recently by using a new substrate. And can you guess what that substrate is? BN. So we were inspired by the Columbia group who put graphene on boron nitride and saw such great improvement in the transport properties. And so we then went off and quickly, or we thought we were quick, but we weren't as quick as we thought. We took CVD graphene and just plopped it on top of boron nitride flakes and came down and stuck it into our STM and looked at it. And sure enough, the graphene on the boron nitride is much better. It's much flatter. This is the topography. Compared to the graphene on the silicon oxide, you can see it's much better on the graphene on the boron nitride. Also, the charge density inhomogeneity is much less on the boron for graphene on boron nitride compared to graphene on silicon oxide. So we published this in this paper, but there's also another paper, another group that got similar results led by Brian Leroy, and they published this paper where they got very similar results, and they got their samples from MIT from Professor Pablo Jarillo Herrero. And that's how you say his name, Jeannie. Okay. And so when you put the graphene on the boron nitride, you see these Moiré patterns, which we see and which the other group also sees. And here is the spectroscopy of the graphene on the boron nitride, and it looks very similar to the spectroscopy of the graphene on the silicon oxide, although it's nicer. We see this characteristic little gap-like feature, which is really due to inelastic tunneling, phonon-mediated inelastic tunneling. We can see the Dirac point shifting around, and there's some other features due to plasmons that I don't want to get into right now, but all of the features have been described, or most of the features have been described in this paper that you can take a look at that we published in 2010. So the boron nitride is very nice because it gets rid of this problem of inhomogeneity that we had, so that's really great, but it also helps us get rid of the second problem of charge bistability in our little charged impurities. And the way it helps us there is because since the graphene on boron, I said your name and you weren't even here. Did you? Oh, good. Did I say it right? Okay. Because it's so smooth, we can perform atomic manipulation on the graphene on boron nitride. And we put the cobalt monomers down onto the graphene on boron nitride. And now, because it's so smooth, we can move them with our STM tip, and we can form little clusters, atomic clusters of dimers, trimers, and other kinds of little structures. And so here I show the building of a cobalt trimer. Here's an image of that trimer. And the reason we build these little clusters is because they have nice charging properties. It turns out that for a cobalt trimer, when we can charge it up or discharge it with the gate, and then when we put the STM tip nearby, the STM tip does not ionize it. So the trimers provide stable charge centers. So that's an improvement. That for us is a big improvement that allows us now to explore the behavior of the Dirac fermion screening in the vicinity of tunable charge centers. And so that's what we've done. And so here I show, these are DIDV images, STM images, DIDV images, which emphasize the local density of states at a particular energy. And here I show a DIDV image of a cobalt trimer in the neutral state. And you can see that this yellow stuff doesn't really extend past the boundary of the cobalt trimer. That's the neutral cobalt trimer. So the graphene is really undisturbed by the neutral trimer. Now let's charge it up by changing the gate voltage underneath. So this is the same trimer. Now let's charge up that same trimer into the Q equals plus one state And now we see all this yellow halo, this yellow stuff. That yellow halo is the screening charge of the Dirac fermions rearranging themselves around this Coulomb impurity. So we can see it directly, that yellow stuff. That's the physics we're after. So now we can do a more quantitative measurement by performing DIDV spectroscopy as a function of distance as we get closer to that charged cobalt trimer. And we can start to test some of these theories. So here I show the DIDV versus voltage as we go closer to the cobalt trimer. And there's one main effect to see, which is that first let's look at this negative energy branch. This is what we like to call the filled states. Here we're injecting holes into the cobalt. And as we get closer to the cobalt, you see we get a depletion in the local density of states. This arrow, these curves are for when you get closer. So in this, for holes, we get a depletion. In here, the positive energy branch, this is what we call the empty states. This is when we're injecting electrons into the graphene. And here, as we get closer to the cobalt trimer, we get an enhancement in the local density of states. And that's very similar to what I mentioned before. That was predicted. And what we can do is we can actually quantitatively compare our experiments to theoretical predictions. And the way we did that was by working with some theorists, of course, Levitov and Andrei Shaitov simulated our experimental results by solving the Dirac equation using a continuum model. They put a Coulomb impurity in that continuum model. And they simulated our data, and the only fitting parameter in the simulation was the interband dielectric constant. And they found that that to fit our data, they needed an interband dielectric constant of 3. And so essentially, that means that we can extract the dielectric constant from our measurements by comparing the theory to the data. And so this is the level of fit that we get for this dielectric constant of 3. As you can see, the fit is not perfect, but it's pretty good. I just want to point out that this dielectric constant that we extract by measuring directly the screening charge is similar to some of these theoretical predictions, which are around 2. It's in the ballpark of some of the recent measurements by Lanzara's group and Guyman co-workers. It's in the same ballpark as these measurements, but it's significantly smaller than a previous measurement by Abamante and co-workers who got a dielectric constant of 15. We can also measure directly the spatial dependence of the local density of states near this charged impurity and compare that to theory. And here I show you that. This is the experiment, and this is the theory from that same model. The impurity is here at x equals 0. And you can see, once again, for the holes in the experiment, we get this characteristic depletion in local density of states near the charged impurity, which you see in the theory. And we also get an enhancement in the local density of states for the electron excitations, which is also seen in the theory. So the bottom line here is that the cobalt trimer in graphene behaves like a subcritical impurity. We're able to see the behavior of these relativistic electrons as they scatter off of this impurity. We are able to extract a dielectric constant of 3 from the theory experiment comparison. So now I want to switch over and talk about the second topic, which is nanoribbons. Here, I just want to emphasize that nanoribbons are desirable. They're a desirable form of graphene because when you cut graphene into little strips, you can tune the band gap, and you can also create really interesting edge states. And we heard a talk on that by Enoki earlier this week, and there's a lot of interesting physics associated with them, and that physics really depends on the geometry of the edges of these nanoribbons. For example, you can get very different behavior edge predicted. You'll get different behavior for armchair edges versus zigzag edges versus chiral edges that might be somewhere in between. So lately, a lot of different people have been looking at these nanoribbons using different techniques. For example, people have been looking at them using transport. This is meant to be just representative. I haven't listed everybody, but this is work from Philip Kim's group. Also on the STM front, Lighting and co-workers have looked at nanoribbon-like platelets on different surfaces, and they've been doing some nice work there. This is some STM data from Mulan and co-workers, where they actually grew nanoribbons using molecular precursors, which is quite nice. And then there's been a number of STM investigations looking at the edge of graphene. These are not actually nanoribbons, but it's still relevant to understand what happens at the edge. This is some earlier work by Inoki and co-workers looking at the edge graphene edges at the surface of graphite crystals. Also, more recently, there's been some work looking at the edge of graphene on silicon carbide. This is by Young Cook's group, and also some people have looked at the edge of graphene directly on silver, on copper. In my own group, we've been looking at nanoribbons that we obtain by chemically unzipping nanotubes. And this chemical unzipping process is performed in the laboratory of Hongzhi Dai using the recipe described in this reference. So Hongzhi Dai, his group basically makes these nanoribbons for us, gives them to us, and then we spin coat them onto clean gold surfaces and we look at them with our STM. This is an STM image of a single nanoribbon at room temperature. And you can see the nanoribbon, it's nice and straight. It has nice straight edges. Here's a cross-sectional slice right here. And you see that it has these humps on the edges. So the graphene the nanoribbon curves at the edge, boop, before it terminates at the gold. And we can actually zoom in on the edge region using our higher resolution low temperature STM. So this is a zoom in of the edge region of a single nanoribbon that has a width of 20 nanometers. You cannot see the full width of the nanoribbon here. The blue part here is gold. This is the edge of the nanoribbon right there. And this is the nanoribbon, this green and reddish stuff. And so a thing to notice is that the edge is quite nice. It's a highly ordered, really nice edge. And from this atomic resolve, we can actually get atomic resolution in this region. And from this corrugation region, we can extract the chirality of the edge. So we can figure out what is the actual edge geometry. And this edge, for example, is an 8-1 edge. And we've performed spectroscopy on these edges. And as we move our STM tip in from the edge, we have seen the existence of an edge state. And you can see that in our spectra. This is DIDV as a function of sample bias. And if you look here in the low energy regions, you can see these little peaks here. Those little peaks are due to the existence of an edge state. And as we move, as these curves, as we go from top to bottom, are the same as if we go from here inward to the center of the nanoribbon. And these, you can see that there's an energy gap between these innermost peaks. And that, we believe, is due to an energy gap in the electronic structure of this edge state. And that energy gap experimentally widens as the nanoribbons get smaller in width. And we've compared that behavior to theoretical simulations performed by Oleg Yazyev and Stephen Louis, and our experiment is in reasonable agreement with their calculations. Now, one of the problems with this experiment is that we don't really know what is the last atom on this edge. You see the edge right there. It's a beautiful straight edge. It's well ordered, but we don't know what the terminal group is. We don't know if it's a molecule or an atom. We don't know what that last atom is because of the way it was prepared chemically in a complex solution. So what we did then, in order to get a better handle on those edges, we took our nanoribbons and we stuck them into a hydrogen plasma to etch away the unknown edge and replace it with a known edge, which is hydrogen. And this, we did this plasma etching in Hongzhi Dai's group. So here I show a nanoribbon before etching, and then here I show, it's not the same one, but it's pretty representative. I show a nanoribbon after etching with the hydrogen plasma, and you can see in this room temperature STM image that the nanoribbon, what we do is it etches away the edge, and this curved region goes away. The nanoribbons then become flattened, and the nanoribbons also become roughened. They become slightly roughened. But if we zoom in on on these edges, we find that the edges actually have facets. They have very highly ordered little regions when you zoom in. So here I show that a zoom in on the edge of one of these etched nanoribbons. And if you look at these little regions, you'll see that this region, for example, I'm zooming it in here. And you can see that it's a zigzag region, which you can figure out by looking at the periodicity. And here, this region, for example, is here zoomed in, and you can see that it's a chiral 2-1 region. And this little region here is actually an armchair region. So this is nice because it means that we can start to look at highly ordered edges of nanoribbons with a termination that we know. We know that the termination, or we strongly believe the termination is hydrogen because that's what we etched it with. But one thing we don't know is what is the actual structure of the hydrogen at the edge. For example, is there one hydrogen per carbon atom or two? Is it sp2 bonded or sp3 bonded? That we don't know that a priori from the experiment, and so we need to resort to theory to help us figure that out. And so in order to get a better handle on that, we worked with Oleg Yazyev and Stephen Louis, and they performed theoretical simulations where they calculated the thermodynamic stability of different edge structures using techniques similar to techniques previously performed. And they simulated our experimental conditions, and they found that for our experimental conditions, the lowest energy structure is this structure where there is one hydrogen atom per terminal carbon atom, and that hydrogen atom is sp2 bonded. As opposed, for example, to this structure, which would be two hydrogen atoms. So they found that that this is the low energy structure for our experiment for both for zigzag armchair and the chiral 2-1. So in order to further further confirm this, they simulated the entire STM image. And here I show you the simulated STM images that they calculated with that particular hydrogen termination compared to our experimentally measured edges. And you can see that there's actually very nice agreement, I think, between the calculation and the theory. And in order to see it better, we calculated average line scans for the experiment and the theory for both the zigzag and the armchair. And here you can see the average line scan for the experimental edge, for the theoretical edge, and for the this is for the zigzag and the armchair. And I think that agreement is pretty nice. For example, for the zigzag edge, we see an edge state, this bump, which comes out of the theory, and we see this, this is the periodicity of the graphene lattice, whereas in the armchair, there is no edge state, and the periodicity that we see is actually a longer wavelength periodicity. Other people have seen longer wavelength periodicity near armchair edges as well. So. In other systems. So that's where I want to end, and I'll just end by saying I think there's a lot of interesting things to do in the future. There's still a lot more to do, but I'll just end here by putting up my collaborator slide. These are the agencies that funded this work. Many people contributed to this. These are the different PIs who contributed to this work, and here I list the students, postdocs, and visitors who worked on each of these two projects. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
In the second part, the space at the edge, are they right at the graph point or are they shifted?
In the last part, what I was showing you are room temperature STM results, and so we were not able to do good spectroscopy. So those are STM images at, say, around half a volt, so we're integrating. So we were integrating all the local density states over that energy range, and that's what the simulation did. So you're asking me what is the, so I can't really satisfy you. We didn't do good energy resolved measurements because that was in our room temperature machine, which isn't good for spectroscopy.
So if you use your the technique by unzipping nanotubes, right, you have also no control about the chirality because, of course, it depends on your original nanotube, right? So is there a way how you could an experiment on a nanowire, let's say electron transport experiment, without having to resort to STM to really check what is the chirality?
Well, let me make one comment first, is that it is, in principle, it's possible to separate these nanotubes, you know, using Hersom's technique. There are these centrifugation techniques. So in principle, we could separate the nanotubes, and we do have evidence that it's a longitudinal unzipping. So in principle, we could control in principle, although in practice it turns out to be kind of hard. So I do want to, you know, step back a little bit, and I think that in principle we could actually control that chirality by sifting through the nanotubes first. But now you're asking, are there other?
Suppose I want to do a transport experiment on a nanowire, and I want to know what the nanowire is. So then I would say you still would have to do also STM on it to figure out what is the nature of the edge.
Yeah, I mean, people can do Raman, you know, people can do Raman on these structures and learn something about the edge through Raman, but I mean, to really understand what the order is of the edge, you know, and what is the nature of your edge, I think you do need some local probe information.
Okay, thank you.
I wanted to ask a question about the cobalt trimers. So, first of all, do they have a spin?
I don't know.
And do you think they have a spin?
I don't know.
Okay, and should it be obvious why the charge bistability is less of an issue for a trimer than a monomer? Or is it a detail?
I can wave my hands.
Please do.
Okay. I mean, it's not completely obvious. I mean, it's a different wave function interacting with, you know, the field from the tip. You know, we are worried about band bending effects. I think the band bending in this experiment is not so significant when we do a comparison of the experiment and the theory. There's always some band bending, but I think it's not a significant factor in this measurement. I just don't really know what to say. I mean, the cobalt trimer has somehow that tip field is not getting into those wave functions. Maybe there's more internal screening in the cobalt atom. There you go, internal screening. Yeah, that's a ticket. We can make it cross, but we can make it go deeper. I'm not sure that it's that simple. But it's really an experimental thing, you know. It's stable. We can do the experiment. But the local electronic structure of that trimer, we don't really know. I mean, we can see some resonances. We can measure it, but no one has done the theory yet. I think the monomers are still controversial. So the trimers.
So I had a question about the STM simulated images with the hydrogen termination. So those looked really nice, but for the other configuration that had two, do they look substantially worse?
Yes, they did. And funny you should ask that. Let me see if I can find that. I can actually show you here. Yeah, like for example, this is for the zigzag edge. This is the one that I showed you. And this is with the two hydrogen atoms. This would be what people refer to as a Klein edge. And it's really a significantly different edge structure. And so this does not fit our data. That's the answer to your question.
Thanks. What position does cobalt take on graphene lattice?
That's a good question. I really don't know. I mean, the theory, the problem that I have experimentally is that when we try to, in order to simultaneously see the lattice on the cobalt atom, we have to dig the STM tip into the surface. But then when we get close to the cobalt, we bump it, we move it. So it's very hard to simultaneously image the cobalt atom and the lattice. Although with enough work, we should be able to figure that out, but we haven't done that yet. That's very hard to figure out. The theorists mostly say it should be in the center of a hexagon, but that's what most theorists will say, but I'm not really sure. But we should be able to figure it out with enough work. We have not done that work.
Okay, with the last question, last two questions.
Oh, you can turn on the thing.
You timed the edge using the hydrogen. Can you use other elements, I mean, air fluorine or some other elements to terminate?
Could we use other elements? I imagine so. For different plasmas, you know, people use these fluorine plasmas, I would imagine. Although, you know, it depends what they do to the rest of the nano ribbon as well. But yes, I imagine that there must be many other tech. We haven't done them. But I would imagine that there are other ways in which we could do that.
Do you know the charge on the cobalt trimer?
Yes, we believe that the charge is one. And the reason we believe that is because we can see this resonance. We can see this resonance. There's two bits of information. One is that we see this resonance. You know, this is the electronic structure of the trimer. We see this resonance, and we can move this resonance across the Fermi energy. So when we move this resonance above the Fermi energy, then we believe that we're charging it by plus one. Because when this is below the Fermi energy, we believe there's one electron there, because we believe the charging energy is too large for there to be two electrons in there. And so if we move this up, we believe it's one electron. And when it's in this state, we believe that's the neutral state, because when we do our experiments, we see no charge effect on our surface. So we believe that it's sitting in a neutral state, and then we move that resonance above, and then it goes into a plus one state. That's what we believe. Yeah, yes. That's what we believe. But we don't have a single electron transistor, you know, but it's because of this resonance crossing the Fermi energy.
Okay, thank you very much. We'll move it to our next speaker. It's Eva Andre, that is going to probe Dirac fermions in graphene from Landau levels to twist-induced Van't Hoff singularities.